Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Whoa-ho! Star Chat is back! Woo! Big win over the Eagles. And now we have to go to the scene of the crime in Atlanta. The 4-5 Cowboys and the 4-5 Falcons. And there's no better way to get ready for that game than to hang out with me and Jared. It's me, Kevin Turner, at KT Fun Tweets on Twitter from the Ben and Skin Show. And joining me now, he's on the blankety blank hotline. And he's here as a new man, as he just got married. It is at Jared Sandler on Twitter, Jared Sandler in real life. Jared, congratulations, and welcome to the Blankety Blank Hotline.
Hey, the Blankety Blank Hotline is the place to be. And first of all, I appreciate it. It was awesome spending the weekend with you and your wonderful significant other. And I have yet to change my name, so thankfully I'm still Jared Sandler. And I also am really happy to report that, in the middle of the ceremony, I got a text from, our good friend, we can't say his name, but, that guy from Blankety Blank, who said that the second week of November sale is off to a record-breaking start, and you still have a few more days left, or maybe one more day left.
Okay, so I got that text as well, and when I saw it, I immediately lit up with even more joy and went and got another drink at the free bar at your wedding.
Nice. That's the way to do it. As a matter of fact, when the rabbi asked me if I take Emily, I think I said yes because it was like excitement for the blankety blank sale. I actually wasn't really answering the question as to whether or not I would take my fiance as my bride. So I think that I made the right choice, though. I just, I really only remember responding out of excitement for the great sales numbers for the blankety blank sale.
So what I think I want, and I don't want to be too, here's what I want. Obviously, I want you and Emily to live a happy life together, but I want you guys to have a wedding like every 4 or 5 years. That was awesome.
We can do that. We can be like Doug Christie and his wife and renew our vows very often.
And just go right to the party part of it.
Yeah, we don't need the ceremony anymore, just the reception.
All right, so, and then, the night after the wedding, the Cowboys went and beat the Eagles. So, pretty good weekend for you, Jared.
Yeah, no complaints. I don't want to speak for you. I definitely wrote the Cowboys off, but maybe it was silly because one thing that they've done a pretty good job of over the Jason Garrett tenure, we talk about them being an 8-8 team. Well, one of the qualities of an 8-8 team is that when you lose, you come back and win. And I think they're now 12-6 or something like that following a loss over their last 18 games following a loss. And so this coaching staff has done a nice job of bouncing back no matter if it's an easy or a tough opponent. And, I don't know how good the Eagles are. They've been a really perplexing team, but you had to go to Philadelphia to try and beat the Eagles, who had just added Golden Tate, a guy who has historically given you fits. And the Cowboys, I don't know, it seemed like the Cowboys were kind of in control the whole way. The Eagles still almost ended up winning. I don't know if that's a good thing, but the Cowboys did get the win. And that really puts them right back in the thick of things, which I guess, again, is the foremost quality of or characteristic of an 8-8 team, is that it's just that this constant seesaw back and forth. And you think they're going to really slant one way and they don't, or the other way and they don't, and they're just kind of hanging around in the middle.
I'll be candid here. We're recording this on Wednesday, so by the time you get it, it'll likely be Wednesday night, Thursday, Friday, or Saturday, or even Sunday before the noon game. So I don't want to spend a lot of time rehashing the Eagles game, but one thing I do want to talk about is what that game meant in terms of taking a little bit of the pressure off this game. Now, I know that sounds crazy. When you're 4-5, you need to go win every game. But just talking from a statistics and mathematical type of model, when you have the Redskins right behind you, or right behind you after Atlanta, obviously in front of you in the standings, but behind you on the schedule coming up, you basically, if you lose to Atlanta and beat Washington, you're in the same spot you were at. Now, the problem is you're losing time. Now, say you go and win both of those games. By my calculations, according to the New York Times, they've got a little simulator that they do for the playoffs. If you win both games, you have a 57% chance of making the playoffs.
All right. Well, I'll take that. And, you know, we've talked about it. I guess I'll ask you the question again, because this game might have some implications on this question. More realistic route towards the playoffs, the division or the wild card? Because if it's the wild card, then this game is even bigger, because this is a team with whom you will likely compete for a wild card spot.
Well, by my calculations on this simulator, so basically it's not my calculation.
No,
that would give the Cowboys currently a 7% chance of being the sixth seed, which would be the wild card. I think we're all giving the Panthers the five seed.
Yeah.
So a wild card would be about a 7% chance. Right now, to win the division, your chances are, according to the math, in the lower 20% range.
Okay, so about three times more likely that you're going to win the division than get into the playoffs via wild card spot, which I bring that up, and I agree with those numbers. I formulated my own formula, and I have slight deviations and whatnot. But I guess my point is you're right. Every game is a big game, and you want to win them all, but so many of these games down the stretch might have implications beyond just a win or a loss. And I think that a game like the Eagles game is obviously a prime example, tiebreaker scenario. How you do against the division is huge. And if you are going for that wild card spot, which you don't need to choose, it's not like they need to declare, oh, we're trying to win the division or we're trying to win the wild card. They're doing both. But I guess I bring up the probabilities because it kind of does go towards your point of, well, yeah, this game's important, but maybe it's not as important because it is seemingly way more likely that if you are going to advance beyond week 17, it's going to be by winning your division, not by getting in via the wild card.
And I think, Jared, it'll all play itself out because when you look at this week's NFL schedule, you're going to have not only the Cowboys and Falcons, you're going to have Green Bay and Seattle. Green Bay is at 4-4-1, and I believe Seattle is now at 4-5, I believe now. So you're going to have that game on Thursday night. You're going to have the Washington-Houston game, and you'll find out kind of where you feel about Washington. The Eagles could die off as they play the Saints, the Eagles at 4-5. And you've also got on Sunday night the Bears and the Vikings, which could give you a little bit more of a better feeling of who's going to win the NFC North. There's a lot of things that are going to be quite clear as we go from week 11 into week 12. And I think that's helpful. The NFL needed a week like this to kind of iron things out when it came to the NFC in that wild card picture, because besides the Panthers getting that fifth wild card spot, you toss it up between five, six, seven teams of who could get the sixth seed. So I think we'll have a really good feeling after this Sunday.
Yeah, and quickly before we, I guess, move on to the Falcons, one thing that jumps out to me about the Eagles, I saw R.J. Choppy tweet this in response to something Chris Collinsworth was saying how, you know, you can really feel the impact of Amari Cooper on the Cowboys, and RJ, I forget what the score was at the time, maybe the Cowboys had 13 points or some underwhelming figure, but RJ tweeted and said, yeah you're right, Chris, yeah, this offense is really exploding, you can really feel the effects, and blah blah blah, kind of, you know, conveying the sentiment of, well, can you really notice a difference? It's not like this offense has taken a step forward in terms of production. I would actually disagree with RJ, and I don't want to sound like Jason Garrett here, but I'm going to use the word process, because I think that you can't judge things always based on the execution of whatever you're trying to do. You know, sometimes you have to look at the opportunities that are created. And, you know, we're not necessarily watching a Pro Bowl quarterback or a guy who has those types of skills. He's missing throws. But, I do think he did all right on Sunday night. But I guess the point is this. I do think you're feeling the effects and seeing the effects because the way teams are playing or scheming against the Cowboys now with Amari Cooper. I mean, I think you heard Dak talk about it after the game when he was talking about seeing two high safeties. this is a Cowboys team that, I don't know, for the last few years, oftentimes we'll see one high safety, and teams will stack the box, and they will go, you know, especially teams that are man coverage teams, they will just, they'll say, hey, Dak, you know, we'll take our chances, because even if a guy does beat one of our guys in man coverage, we don't necessarily have a lot of confidence or have a lot of fear in the receiver that you're going to be throwing to. We also don't have a lot of fear in you as a passer. But with Amari Cooper, it seems like it is changing the dynamics of how teams are defending the Cowboys. And it doesn't mean that Zeke isn't going to face eight men boxes. He still will at times, but it does seem like, you know, even with Dez Bryant, this was not the case. And I know there are a lot of people who want to, you know, be at the front of the Dez Bryant train, and maybe he still has something left if he can recover from this Achilles. But it does seem like with Amari Cooper, for the first time in a few years, teams have a receiver on the Cowboys against whom they have to respect, not just in the red zone, but from the goal line to the goal line, if that makes sense. There's certain receivers where once you get in the red zone, I think Dez was one of these guys, you really got to fear him. But in between the 20s or in between the 40s, you don't have to worry about them as much. I think Amari Cooper is the type of guy you got to worry about no matter where the ball is.
You know, it makes you wonder about the Dez thing, because you sit there and go, well, five catches at, you know, however many yards. All right, you'd sit there and go, okay, that's a pretty good day for Dez. Like, that's all you were expecting, right? Because then, yeah. Now I'm sitting there thinking about this with Cooper. If he's created this and we're sitting there and the offense was so bad, wow, now we've got a guy who can go 5 for 75. Oh, the offense has changed. And it's kind of like, well, you kind of had that with Dez in a way. It wasn't always consistent, and we'll see how consistent it is with Amari Cooper, but it feels like you kind of already had that with Dez.
Yeah, I guess I would say, and maybe I'm wrong, and I'm not going to sit here and act like I, you know, I chart how opposing defenses play the Cowboys on a, you know, not just a game-by-game basis, but a play-by-play basis. It just seems like, and this is not to take anything away from Zeke, but it does seem like things open up a little bit more for Zeke, or have opened up a little bit more with Amari Cooper. And I know that, what was it, 2 games ago, he didn't have a tremendous game, but you know, looking at the numbers and the way and maybe this is an Eagles thing. I guess we have to wait and see how things go with the Falcons, who, you know, we'll talk about in a second. They, you know, they're coming off a game which they didn't stop the run well at all. You know, maybe it's going to be just a week by week thing based on the scheme and who you're playing. But it seemed like the Eagles were putting a little more attention on the receivers, or at least on Amari Cooper, allowing maybe, you know, more opportunities for Zeke to run against less crowded boxes or schemes that are not as focused on shutting him down. And he took full advantage of it, too. And we also, you know, Zeke in the passing game, I mean, I think we talked about this from the beginning of the year, how for a quarterback in Dak who does at times struggle to throw the ball downfield or make the reads necessary to throw the ball downfield, having an able running back in the passing game is huge. And it seems like the way that they've started to use Zeke in that regard is, you know, is only going to help Dak. And when you drop back to pass and you've got a receiver like Amari Cooper, and you know this, KT, I'm not a big Dez guy. Not to take away from what he has accomplished in the past. I'm in the camp that I didn't think Dez had anything left in the tank. And it's unfortunate now that he has the ruptured Achilles, because that's an injury that's going to be awfully tough for a guy his age to come back from. And it probably isn't going to be a fair representation of what he actually had left in the tank if he doesn't come back well from this. But I just think that Amari Cooper's a guy who, over the course of a long period of time, is going to demonstrate the difference that this offense has, the dynamic, as opposed to just a small sample of 2 games.
And also that excludes, and my name is Kevin, but I'm going to be frank with you for 1 minute. Basically, if you look it around, and a lot of people love Dez, respect Dez, the majority of the people in the organization didn't want him around anymore. And I think that's something that we always have to remember when we talk about Dez's production and what happened with the move. And I don't want to get too lost in that. I do want to talk about this before we get into the Falcons real quick. Left guard, Xavier Suafilo, or is it Xavier Suafilo? I'll never know. Comes in. They chose to start him because he was bigger. Alex Redmond was the guy who had to fill in for Zach Martin for a series. Redmond, you know, more of an athletic guy, able to pull, do some of those types of things. Xavier Suofilo is more of a mauler, a Ronald Leary type. Just get in, and they've chose him because Fletcher Cox and Haloti Ngata, big dudes. And you look at Xavier Suofilo, and he had one of the best games of any offensive lineman in the entire NFL this week. So I guess my question for you is, what is the fallback, the fallout from this? Is it Connor Williams is out of a job when he gets back? Is it we're discussing a move next year of Connor Williams out to right tackle and Lyle's on the hot seat? What do you think the move is? Lyle's still under contract next year. Any type of fallout from this do you see in your eyes?
Okay, so first of all, I want to backtrack on Connor Williams, and you obviously studied tape on him. One of the issues, and maybe this was more of a left tackle than a right tackle issue, is and maybe I'm mixing up my young offensive lineman, was one of his issues the arm length?
A little bit, but it was enough to – it was okay. It wasn't something that was enough to, like, really make you super concerned.
Okay, so what – and I guess to further answer this question, what is your assessment on Lyle Collins this year?
I think Lyle Collins has been their worst offensive lineman this year. So
would you have predicted that going into the year? Because it's
where when you really look at Lyle Collins, I do think his best football in the NFL has been played at tackle, though. So I've never been one of those guys who is like, well, if you just move him to guard, you fix it. It ain't like Lyle Collins was ever really good at guard. He wasn't. Yeah. He had some highlight reel blocks down the field, but in 2016, everyone did. I mean, so to me, it was just like, to me, that was always a weird thing to just automatically want to move him. I'm not one of those guys who wanted to automatically move Connor Williams. I don't think Connor Williams has been as bad as people think. I just think the struggles were going to be there, and we've been calling it since before the season. The guy came out of college prepared to play tackle, not prepared to play guard, and that's going to take putting a lot of meat on your bones. So that's something the Cowboys training staff needs to figure out. It's probably their medical department and all that. They need to figure out, hey, is this a guy who can hold the weight once you put it on him? And, you know, you do have Collins under contract. I mean, worst comes to worst, dude. If Connor Williams or Lyle Collins are offensive line depth, you're in a good spot. Now, look, it's one game. I'm not handing Xavier the job. I'm not doing that. We need to see how he fares against Atlanta. We need to see if he can hack it against Washington on Thanksgiving Day against those Alabama defensive linemen. He's got to prove more. There's a reason he's kind of been a utility guy around the league, although he did have some starts in Houston. There's a reason he didn't walk in and just get handed a starting job. You know, but I just think it's interesting to see things click the way they clicked against that really good defensive line. Tells me there could be something on the front burner moving forward.
So I think there are two things that need to be considered here. One, when Connor Williams comes back, if this team is still a playoff contending team and Xavier Suofilo is still a part of the solution the way we are discussing him after the Sunday night, I don't think a change is made. Even if Xavier Suofilo is playing well, but when Connor Williams comes back, this team isn't really a playoff team. Maybe they've lost three straight. They've lost, you know, whatever the scenario is. Maybe they're 4-7, 4-8. Then I think Connor Williams plays. The other element to this is, you know, the Cowboys financially have decisions that they need to make this offseason. Now, I hate to say that a team in the NFL is ever in cap hell because there are so many ways to manipulate, and the Cowboys certainly aren't like the Rams are going to be in a few years. They are, you know, the Rams are really going all in right now. And I don't know what Lyle's contract is from a guaranteed standpoint. Maybe you know this better.
I don't think it's any guaranteed next year, but okay. I know his cap number is like 7. So, yeah, I mean, some of it's going to be guaranteed, but it's not all of it for sure.
Okay, so, you know, maybe it's one of those moves where, and I don't know that this would be the biggest surprise, but every year, every team seems to have a surprise move where a guy gets cut and, cap reasons come to play. And maybe, you know, if they feel like they're happy with Connor Williams' growth, maybe that's the route they take. I don't know. The sense I get is that Lyle Collins will be this team's starting right tackle next year, and Connor Williams will be the, you know, starting guard. But I think for this year, and this is a cop-out answer, but I think for this year, it's going to depend on, if Xavier Suofilo is continuing to play well. Obviously, he's got to play well to earn it. But if he is playing well, which we'll assume he is for the sake of this question, is this a playoff contending team or not? Because if they are, then I don't think you can get rid of the hot hand, especially for a line that has had some issues, particularly away from home. But if they're not, then it doesn't make sense to not give Connor Williams those reps. And maybe that's not the right way to look at it. That's just the way I'm looking at it.
Well, if they run the ball dominantly through the end of this year with Xavier Suofilo, he is your, he's going to be your player. They're not going to take him out, as you mentioned. So, yeah, it's just interesting. It's something that will play out on its own. I do think we should keep into account that Dak and Lyle are super tight. Now, their contracts will go up at the same time, but they are super tight. I think that's something to remember as well. I want to move on to the Falcons, Jared, and they're a team who I've watched a little bit of. I actually got to see the Cleveland game. And I scanned through it on DVR because I record every NFL game. PlayStation View, by the way. You can get a good discount on them at the Blankety Blank store. PlayStation View is really good because when you set something to record, it'll record everything of it. So, like, if I record an NFL game, it'll record every NFL game. So I'll eventually get that Falcons-Browns game after they replay it on the NFL Network. So it's all good. So as I was zooming through it, and I also have Jeff Kavanaugh's Game Pass, but I did not use that. I was just zooming through it. And I read an article, too, about Julio Jones making comments on Cover 2. Now, the Browns are playing Cover 2. Two really deep safeties, which Greg Williams does traditionally. I normally kill him for it, but two safeties way back deep. And Julio Jones made comments like, if we're not able to beat the Cover 2, or if we can't find a way to start beating Cover 2, then we're going to lose. Now, the Cowboys have played a lot of Cover 3 this year, because that's kind of what Chris Richard wants to do. It matches what they probably do best by bringing Jeff Heath up in the box a little bit. And I think it's interesting to see how the Falcons have played. Now I'm just going off of Falcons insiders and what I've read from a couple articles trying to fix this offense. And then I want to hear what you have to say after I talk about this for a minute, because you're a USC fan and you had Sarkisian as a part of your team. So basically, early on in drives, they're relying on Julio and Calvin Ridley to win one-on-one matchups on the outside. Now, once they get down into the red zone, they focus so much on fixing their red zone issues that they really do start to bring out wild creativity and mesh routes and rub routes and crossers and all that stuff, creating traffic to get guys open. And it's really helped their red zone percentage. But, it's still the same old Falcons away from that. Once you get down, get them in their own territory, they're still going to be kind of relying on Julio to win one-on-one. And to me, that plays into the Cowboys' hands because Byron and Cheeto have both proven one-on-one matchups, they can win on the outside all day long. So I'm curious to see what you think as a guy who's experienced the Sarkisian play calling firsthand.
So when Sark was calling plays, I was only around for the second iteration of that. When I think I only overlapped with Sark 1 year before he moved on to Washington and had some success building that program up. And then he obviously comes back to become USC's head coach after the Lane Kiffin era. And the joke with Sark, and it was very similar when he was with Alabama that brief time, is he loves to call screens, first of all, and that he would do something and it would work. And it would work, and then he would just go away from it, and you would never see it again. It's somewhat similar to what Cowboys fans say about Scott Linehan, though I will say that Steve Sarkisian is way more creative. But it seems like, first of all, obviously Atlanta's offense has been really successful. I know that they're coming off a game in which they put up 16 points. This is an offense that has thrown the ball really well. It doesn't seem like they've been able to get into a groove running the ball, though. Devontae Freeman, has been out. I always felt like with Sark, and there's so many things, so many elements that go into play that you don't know. I think if you ask the USC fan during the Sark era, they always felt like there was more talent than production offensively, if that makes sense.
And God, just, I feel like that makes a lot of sense. And I also they don't run the ball well. So there's something that I think the Cowboys defense, I think we feel good about that as well. If there's any way, I think, to really beat the Cowboys, to me, it's not really – it might be throwing maybe the deep ball a few times as we saw the Eagles burn them, just because, safety probably not the strong suit of this team, but that defense has been so good, you're really saying something as a weakness is not calling it a a weakness like you would be saying that about a normal team, because this defense has been really strong. Maybe the deep shot, and they will take a few deep shots, but they don't run the ball well. And to me, that's kind of the spot where I say, hey, man, maybe you could eventually run the ball well against the Cowboys. And no one has really done that very well since maybe the Lions game. You know, it's been a while since the Cowboys have got torched on the ground. So I think that's a pretty interesting thing. I'm also very leery, though, taking on a team, obviously at home, in a dome like that, where you had nightmares from literally a year and a week ago. I mean, it's like, this is the exact same timeline as last year. But I have things like comments after that game where the Falcons were talking about, oh, yeah, we were rolling and we came into Cleveland like we'd already won the game. Like, they basically admitted that they weren't ready to play. And I think Dan Quinn's a pretty good coach, and I think he'll whip them into shape, and they'll be ready to go on Sunday.
Yeah, and I don't know if we're ready to pick the game or not. But it is interesting to me, from a defensive side of the Falcons, and obviously there's so much talk about the offensive side. You know, one of the big things last year with the Falcons in that matchup was the pressure they got on Dak, right? That's you know, you've talked about it a number of times on this podcast. A lot of people have talked about it. That's when Dak changed. You know, he just was so scarred from, you know, constantly getting hit and sacked and whatnot, and the Byron Bell stuff and everything, and the Cowboys not making adjustments. This Falcons defense this year, it's not a defense that's going to take the ball away from you too terribly much. I think they have 8 interceptions on the year. That's, you know, it's not a bad number by any means, but they're not a ball-hawking defense. And they're kind of, what, middle of the pack in terms of sacking the quarterback?
Yeah, they're right there in the middle. They haven't had a big year out of Vic Beasley, who was a top 10 pick for them. And, you know, Tack McKinley's been really good for them. I know that's a guy I think we Cowboys fans might have wanted over Taco Charlton. In fact, I believe the Falcons leapfrogged us to go get him. He's had a really big year. But they're a bottom 5 defense in the league. Yeah. Make no mistake about it. In yardage, in points, they don't stop anybody. They've dealt with a ton of injuries. And they're getting Deion Jones back, their linebacker. I don't know how effective he's going to be. They're getting him back, and he's probably their MVP on defense. So I think that's a little bit of a factor if he is at all the Deion Jones that he's been in the past.
Do you think the Cowboys have it in them? And I know that, like, the easy answer is no, because this is not an explosive offense. But with Amari in the mix, with the way Zeke has run the ball, with maybe the way the Cowboys started moving the ball in the second half last week, if the Cowboys need to win a game in the 30s against the Falcons, do you think they could do that?
Or
do you think
I don't have any faith in that.
Okay. So I don't either. And I guess then the question is, do you have faith in the Cowboys keeping, and I know that the Browns just did it. I know the Browns just held them under 20. Do you think the Cowboys have the ability to, okay, I'll ask it two parts. Do you think the Cowboys have the ability to keep the Falcons under 20 like the Browns did? And do you think the Cowboys have the ability to keep the Falcons under 30? Because I think they do have the ability to keep the Falcons under 30, but I don't think it's 21, 22, 23. I think it's 27, 28. I don't see the Falcons having consecutive weeks under 20.
I don't either, and that's where I think you start to look at maybe last week, the way you did it last week, you're probably going to need Zeke to have 100-and-something yards, you know, and you're going to have to throw it to him. And look, you're going to need one big interception, and it was the Van Der Esch play this week. God, Van Der Esch was awesome, but I think it's going to be something like that. I think it'd be, until the Cowboys prove it, that they're capable of going and winning, you know, those big 30-point games, I'm going to have a hard time ever picking them. I do think they've got a really good chance. I don't have a ton of faith in them having a real solid game plan, to be honest. I mean, I should give Scott credit, Linehan credit last week. I thought it was a good game plan. I do think it's ironic that, you know, end of this first half, they start playing with pace and tempo. Dak starts playing well, starts letting it rip, and Dak had a really confident, you know, second half and the last drive of the first half. Dak was confident. This Monday that came of this week marked the same day of the day Dak was broken in Atlanta last year. So we are 365 days. Well, on that 364th day, we saw Dak finish that calendar year with a lot of confidence. And if that can come back, then maybe, you know, Beasley, Cooper, Gallup, will go, even Hearns when he's got to fill in when guys are catching a breather, they've shown that they can go win one-on-one for you every once in a while. And I think that's going to be good enough to get by if Dak is confident in seeing it and ripping it. And I think that's a big part of this game. Dak playing with confidence, stepping up, making those big throws, letting it rip. But I can't stress this enough, Jared. This game of the next two is not the important one. Both of them are, obviously, but I'd rather the Cowboys lose this game and win the next one. So if they got a bag of tricks or something, save it for Washington.
Yeah. I mean, especially, again, that goes back to what we were saying in the beginning. If the division is the more likely route, then you've got to win one and lose one of the next two because, you know, it'll be tough to win them both. Then, yeah, you absolutely say, all right, I'll lose this one. I'll go take that Washington game because that's the one that, again, the division seems way more likely. New York Times analytics suggest it's three times more likely, and it's unlikely to me that you win the division by having an outright better record. If you win the division, you are almost certainly going to win the division by way of a tiebreaker. And the best way to do that is to go and win the games in your division.
Absolutely. And I want to say this real quick, too. I want to give Scott and Jason a little bit of credit. Hey, I don't want them around, okay? I want them gone, okay? I'm not saying that. But the first half of the season, if you look at the defenses the Cowboys played, and we knew this going in, they played some really good defenses. Seattle, Carolina, Washington's turned out to be a really good defense that I really didn't expect. Houston, a really good defense. They played some really good defenses. Tennessee. And then you look at the back half of the schedule, they play some really bad defenses. So I know we were crushing them and killing them, and it was all warranted, but it does deserve to be noted that the Cowboys were going up against really, really, really good defenses, and that was always something that was going to happen, and that was always something that was going to change as you go to the back half of the schedule. So, you know, maybe the offense starts to show a little more than they did in the first half, and maybe there's a reason for that.
And, hey, you mentioned Tennessee. I know we're going to go around the league in a little bit, but that's more looking at this week's matchups versus last. Tennessee absolutely took care of New England. Does that in any way, shape, or form change your view on the Cowboys' loss to the Titans?
A little bit, just the same way the Jacksonville game changed my view of it. Hey, what happened in the game, and you can't ignore it, but you start to look at it, how every team's facing after they face Kansas City, how they're faring after they face Kansas City around the league. Teams are gassed and have no energy during the week and aren't able to prepare to their fullest because the Chiefs wore them out. So
yeah,
I think that's interesting to think about that, and I think the Titans deserve credit. It changes the way I think about Matt LaFleur a little bit, their offensive coordinator, play caller, a guy who I wouldn't mind having in here because he's a guy who's working with these parts, and he's just trying to get it right, and he's in his ninth game as a play caller, and he went out and called a great game. So I think that's it's always good to note things like that when you take a look at your schedule.
KT, I'm going to go Falcons 27, and I'll go Cowboys 20.
Yeah, I think that's a good spot because, look, I'll be up front with you. I'm picking the Cowboys to beat the Redskins on Thanksgiving Day. I'm going Falcons 24, Cowboys 20. Same
right.
Type of area, close game, just not enough gas in the tank to get it done.
And come out healthy and get ready for Thursday.
And, man, I felt like this was a loss all year long, you know? So maybe I should give the team a little more credit after what happened Sunday night. But it's just, man, I just think going into Atlanta, especially after they got beat, that's a tough thing. I might feel a little different if they would have walked over Cleveland. I feel worse about it after they lost to Cleveland.
Right, because this is a huge game for them because their path to get in the playoffs is going to be the wild card.
Yeah.
Not the division. So not to say that this game, again, neither of us are saying this game is not important for the Cowboys. They all are. But if you had to pick which one is more important between this week and next week, it's next week. Whereas for the Falcons, this game is huge. This game is very big for them. They can't fall to 4-6 and expect to get into the wild card.
Yeah, basically, if you were going to lose one of these games, only one of these games buries you in your grave, and it ain't this one. Jared,
exactly.
NFL. Let's go. Thursday night, Packers at Seahawks. Packers are 4-4-1. Seahawks are 4-5. I'll say this, given the tiebreaker situation, Cowboys fans should be pulling for the Packers.
Yeah, and unfortunately, it's really adverse circumstance for the Packers. Short week. They played the late afternoon game on Sunday. Travel. They're beat up. They're down four starters on the defensive side. They're down Randall Cobb, who, you know, he is what he is at this point in his career, but, you know, it's a really young receiving core. And I don't know. I mean, it's going to be a really tough game for the Packers to win, but, you know, you and I both follow this team rather closely. If this team is going to not waste another year with Aaron Rodgers and make the playoffs, they've got to go and win this game. But it's not going to be tough. A Thursday night short week on the road with all these defensive players missing. I'm just not sure what to make of this game at all.
I'll say this, and I think Russell Wilson's one of the cheesiest guys in the league, but he's really fun to watch and deserves a lot of credit for what he's been able to do in Seattle. And I think Thursday night's game has a late game, whoever gets the ball last type of feel to it, with Russell Wilson kind of getting squirrely and pulling something out of his butt, and Seattle getting the win. You know, last minute field goal by Sebastian Janikowski. That's the type of vibe
He chugs like a bottle of Jack or something right after.
Oh yeah, absolutely. After he drills it off the right upright and in, he doinks it.
Yep, he loves to doink it. It's his favorite move.
And by the way, opening up some pop-up stores this holiday season, Doinkity Doink, by the creators of Blankety Blank. You can check those out around the Christmas holiday season starting on December 15th, running throughout the years. The Doinkity Doink pop-up store, found anywhere in the Metroplex.
All your doinking needs there.
Elsewhere on the noon games, let's not spend a lot of time on 6-3 Carolina or 3-6 Detroit, unless I throw out two things for you, Jared, to think about. Maybe the Panthers come back to you if they get a loss at 6-4. And is Matt Patricia on the hot seat already?
Yeah, he might be. He seems to be more concerned about posture than anything else. I don't see the Lions winning this game, and I agree that we shouldn't spend a ton of time. I would ask you, since both teams have lighter shades of blue in their primary colors, which color scheme do you prefer better, the Lions or the Panthers?
The Panthers, especially when they play with that aqua blue.
Ooh, I love the aqua blue.
Titans are 5-4. Colts are 4-5. A sneaky good game at noon that looked crappy about 8 weeks ago.
Yeah, and you know, we talked about this a few minutes ago. The Titans coming off a big win over the Patriots. It's a, you know, a team that you know, a lot of people keep kind of waiting for the emergence of Marcus Mariota, whichever one it is. The defense for the Titans really good. You know, the Colts really don't stop anyone. I'm curious of your thoughts with the Colts. First of all, Eric Ebron has like really emerged as an outstanding tight end. The Lions never seem to figure out how to best use him. And maybe it's the Andrew Luck effect, because he'll throw to like everybody. But what are your thoughts on Andrew Luck so far? Is he back, or is he still a lesser version of the guy that he was prior to the injuries? Because he's putting up numbers, but you know, it's sometimes tough to measure just on numbers.
Still lesser version, I think, but I think watch out for him next year. I feel like he'll be all the way back after he gets through another full off season and is ready to go. The complete training situation that he'll go through and all that stuff, that he's able to cut it loose. I feel the Colts is a bright organization. They got a good GM in there now in Ballard, who was with the Chiefs and was with the Packers school of GMing that brought us is from, and Schneider and Dorsey and all these great GMs throughout the league. The head coach, Reich, I think, is it Reich with
Frank
them?
Reich? What's that?
Reich is their head coach, right?
Frank Reich, yeah.
Yeah, that's a pretty good offensive mind. And I think the way they use Doyle and Ebron is interesting. Marlon Mack's a good player who I loved out of college. They haven't even gotten Naheem Hines involved, and they'll see if he gets involved. If they can add one wide receiver or two, to me, though, and like I said, I love Marlon Mack. To me, they're a team that has a ton of cap space and that can go get busy in free agency. It's not a great wide receiver class, but Le'Veon Bell with the Colts and Andrew Luck makes a lot of sense to me.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people have kind of pegged the Colts as, if not a favorite, a team that certainly will aggressively pursue him. That would be a hell of a combination.
Jared, I'm skipping 3-6 Tampa Bay at the 2-7 Giants. Let's go to 6-3 Houston at 6-3 Washington.
Well, this Houston team is so odd, but, you know, this is also the same Houston team I picked to go to the Super Bowl before the year. That pick looks like it sucks. Uh, I I'm of the opinion that Washington, and especially if they lost to Atlanta, they're going to crater. But they came back and got a win. But I'm going to go ahead and tell you, I think the Houston Texans win this game. I don't know. I have a very tough time, and I think Jay Gruden is a great play caller. I have a very and as you mentioned, they're equipped with a much better defense. Probably, a surprise to many, certainly myself. I just have a tough time seeing Washington win this division. And in order for them to not win this division, they're going to have to start losing games. So I'm going to pick the Texans for no other reason than optically. I can't get it in my mind that the Redskins are winning this division.
Redskins have a really good defense, and I'm taking nothing away from them, but that's an offense that scored 16 points on Tampa Bay. That tells you there's major problems there on offense. They've got some issues, and it's all injury-related. Adrian Peterson has died off, and he died off when two of their Redskins starting guards died off. And that's where you sit there and go, okay, well, maybe these injuries are eventually going to start equating to losses. Hasn't happened yet, but it will, and I hope it's this week. This is going to be one of those fun things that we don't really get a ton of with the Cowboys, because the Cowboys usually play the late game, or they'll get a primetime situation. Both noon games with Washington, kind of games happening at the same time, so you'll be kind of maybe flipping over to Red Zone or maybe checking your phone to see what's going on in that Washington game live as the Cowboys game is going. I like stuff like that and happening live with two things going on at once. I think that's going to create an awesome atmosphere on Sunday.
For sure, no doubt.
Let's go to 6-2-1 Pittsburgh at 3-6 Jacksonville. Don't want to spend a lot of time on this, although the Le'Veon Bell thing is over. Now Pittsburgh could probably focus and move on. And we were talking about Pittsburgh maybe not being good earlier in the year. Maybe this is the year, and they're having internal warfare. Dude, they're 6-2-1.
Yeah. It's a good team. And, I think the biggest thing for them is that defensively they've really taken a step forward, maybe a step and a half forward. It's a team that their identity back in the day was their defense. And, through the Bill Cowher years, their defense. And then all of a sudden, this becomes an offense that just airs it out. Not at the beginning of Ben Roethlisberger's time there, but as Ben Roethlisberger has grown into the quarterback he's become, it seems like the defense is really taking a step backwards for the Steelers. But not this year, and I think that's a big reason why they are where they are. Obviously, James Conner adding, I don't want to say the Le'Veon Bell dynamic out of the backfield, because that's not fair. But, he has done a really good job. It's not like they're replacing Dez Bryant with Allen Hurns. They're not replacing Le'Veon Bell with, Rod Smith or something. I think I asked this earlier in the year, Juju Smith-Schuster, one of the best receivers. I really believe he's one of the best receivers in the NFL. They got two really good, capable tight ends, and Jesse James and Vance McDonald. It seems like Ben is getting protected. But I also wouldn't sleep on Jacksonville to kind of snake one from them. That's still a really good defense, even if they're not as good as they were last year. They're not getting the same like high-level production from some of the guys. Seemed like they had peak years last season. And offensively, we know what Jacksonville is and what they aren't. But, I think a lot of people pick the Steelers to go to the Super Bowl out of the AFC. I certainly had them winning the division. And I think they are a really, really good team. I guess we won't know. Do you think they could have really made something work with Le'Veon and James Conner and had some like two-headed monster that would have made them significantly better? Or do you think that they've kind of, I don't want to say maxed out offensively, do you think if Le'Veon came back, they would only incrementally get better? Or do you think they could have really been dangerous?
I don't think they would have been able to coincide and make it work, to be honest.
Yeah, I agree.
Closing out the noon slate, 5-4 Cincinnati at 4-5 Baltimore. Jared, I for one am praying that Joe Flacco doesn't play and they let Lamar Jackson get his first NFL start.
And you're still high on him, right? Because I'm not a big Lamar Jackson guy.
I am high on him.
Okay. Let me rephrase. I'm not a big Lamar Jackson can be your every snap of the game quarterback and succeed. And I know we have yet to really enter into a territory that doesn't include Taysom Hill and Drew Brees, where you use multiple quarterbacks as much as they do. And I know that Lamar has his packages. But I'm with you. I am very curious to see how it would look. I'm just not sold that he is going to be that guy.
Going to skip 1-8 Oakland at 2-7 Arizona, the 3 o'clock slot. Going to skip 3-6 Denver at 7-2 Chargers. Let's talk quickly about Philadelphia, 4-5 at 8-1 New Orleans. I would assume New Orleans torches that dog crap secondary of the Eagles.
Yeah, and it's pretty impressive the way New Orleans did what they did against Cincinnati on the road, because that is not a bad Bengals team.
So I've got two measuring stick games of the week. I've got a small, it's kind of a, just a normal foot-long ruler measuring stick. And then we'll go into the big yardstick measuring stick game of the week.
Got it.
The small foot-long ruler, maybe it's got all the president's faces on the back of it, is the 5-3-1 Vikings at the 6-3 Bears on Sunday Night Football.
Who are you picking?
Vikings.
I thought going into the year the Vikings were the best team of the NFC. They obviously are not the best team of the NFC. I still think they win the division. And to me, the X factor is the quarterback play. Give me a Kirk Cousins team over a Mitch Trubisky team.
Going outside to play on the in the cold at Soldier Field, obviously the Vikings will sometimes shut it down and play inside the dome, which is kind of weird this time of year. Do you think you'd want your team to establish an identity as either an indoor or outdoor type of team? But that should be a fun one on Sunday night. I do think it'll be a close game. And then we go to the Monday nighter that's been moved to L.A., the yardstick, big dong, measuring stick game of the week. 9-1 Chiefs at the 9-1 Rams.
Yeah, this, and I'm glad that they've moved the game, because I'd hate to, for this game to be played with key players threatening not to play and all the ifs and the whats and the buts and whatever. But, man, this is, we've kind of, people have been looking forward to this game for weeks, right? Months, even.
Yeah.
Do you think that this, so I think I read that it's the highest opening over under ever. Do you see this game being as offensive as Vegas thinks, or do you think it's like one of those games where it ends up like defense ends up deciding this thing?
Cause I do, because right, you know, the Rams defense hasn't been as good as I thought it would be. Peters has not had a great year in this Wade Phillips scheme. Aqib Talib getting hurt has really kind of hurt them, and I think that Connor Cup injury, I'm sorry, the Cooper Cup injury is going to be huge for the Rams, just taking away that extra target that you might need to go head-to-head with the Chiefs. Josh Reynolds is a guy to me. You know, he's not someone who's a very good route runner. He's a guy who kind of wins with size and physicality. They're going to stay in that same formation, three wide receivers, one tight end. And maybe they start to get Everett involved or Higbee, one of the tight ends involved in the offense a little bit. But to me, it's a game where the Rams, I think the Rams are going to struggle to keep up with the Chiefs. I think there's a reason the Chiefs didn't really put it on Arizona last week. I think they're saving everything they got for this measuring stick game of the week against the Rams.
And I'll say this, KT. The one way I think the Rams do beat the Chiefs, and I'm with you, I don't think they do. I think that they've got, it's got to be like a 2016 Dallas Cowboys special where you just control the crap out of the ball and you prevent this Chiefs offense from getting into a rhythm. I just don't know how else it happens. And so obviously that means that you're going to need a big game out of Todd Gurley, which that's not, you know, you're probably going to get a big game out of Todd Gurley, but I would almost say that, and this is going to sound weird, but if Todd Gurley breaks out like a 75-yard touchdown run, that almost helps the Chiefs. I mean, it doesn't help the Chiefs, but if you're the Chiefs, what I think can really slow down your offense is if the Rams have 6, 7, 8 minute possessions. Because it seems like this year, whenever I'm watching the Chiefs, they're getting the ball back quickly. And even though their defense isn't very good, they're not giving up these long possessions that prevent the Chiefs from establishing a rhythm offensively. And then kind of a follow-up, and I heard someone ask this question, I forget who it was, who's the better player? And I know it's apples to oranges, but who's the best player on the Rams? Is it Todd Gurley or Aaron Donald?
Probably Aaron Donald is the way I would look at it, but I probably value what he can do on the defensive line, both inside and outside, and kind of what he does late in games. Although Gurley, man, the same thing as faux wide receiver. So I would say it's Donald, but, man, that's close.
Yeah, they're both amazing players, arguably the best of their position.
Who's the better quarterback, Mahomes or Goff?
Oh, to me, it's Mahomes. It's not even close.
Okay, yeah, and I still, like, I think Mahomes is more capable of throwing you the ball Like throwing interceptions, I guess. I think he's going to be more turnover prone than Goff.
That's fair. I mean, you know, we certainly saw that at Texas Tech. I think Jared Goff is a really nice quarterback, and he makes some throws where you're like, wow. I just think that Pat Mahomes takes it to another level. You know, Pat Mahomes to me is the MVP of the league. I don't think that, you know, obviously that's not some bold comment, but it's tough to take anyone over Pat Mahomes right now.
All right. Well, thank you, everyone, for listening to this edition of Star Chat as we get you ready for the Falcons game. It's brought to you by blankdblank.com, as always. Jared, your closing thoughts, and then we'll get the heck out of here.
KT, I love you hard.
There were Jared's closing thoughts, not delivered in a gentle manner, forcibly thrown out to you on this edition of Star Chat. We'll talk to you next week as we get you ready for the Cowboys and Redskins on Thanksgiving Day. Everyone have a good week. Enjoy all the football. And shout out to Jared, who just got married and loves me hard.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.